Evening. We're going to spend some time looking at the world of work and reflecting on that. The world of work affects all of us, and for some of it it'll be a paid employment, some of it it'll be perhaps a ministry, a church role, some it'll be being a homemaker. So I'm broadening my definition of the world of work right out to anything that occupies us substantially during the week. And we're going to spend some time just thinking about that and reflecting on it. Because the culture we live in has quite a breadth of experience with the world of work, doesn't it? Because we've got, at the rather grim end of the spectrum, we've got the 0 hours contracts, modern slavery bill, 2015. Remarkable, isn't it, that we have legislation on slavery in 2015. And at the other end, if you've ever heard people talk about what it's like to work in Google, and it sounds like they sit around on beanbags all day long and think great thoughts about how the future is going to be. I'm sure they do a lot more than that. But clearly there are some very enlightened workplaces where people can get very creative, and yet we still have some appalling situations where people are being exploited. I think my most unusual job was as a porter in St. James's Hospital. You know, Jimmy's in Leeds. Have you ever come across that? There was a TV programme on the hospital a few years ago. I used to work on the wards there in the summer when I was a student. It was a strange job. We had to sometimes take the corpses of dead people and take them down to the mortuary where they were left. Our job was to take up a trolley with a big box on it, and the nurses would wrap the patient who died mummy style, and we would put them on this trolley and put a box over the top of the person. A gentleman had passed away, and he passed away in his sleep, sitting up. And you're probably ahead of me now, aren't you? Rigor mortis had set in. And so when we put the gentleman on the trolley and pushed his legs down, his head came up. And when we pushed his head down, his legs came up. And we had the awkward moment of trying to get this guy gently, because obviously this was somebody's relative and we wanted to be professional. But every time we pushed one end, the other end came up. And that was a very bizarre experience. Some of my colleagues actually had a similar sort of experience, but one of the porters leaned on somebody who passed away. And in that situation, what happens is that you press down the chest and air goes across the vocal cords. And the corpse of this man groaned, which was very, very odd. I'm a teacher now, so I don't have a lot of that sort of thing going on now. But the workplace can be an unusual place, can't it? I'm going to do some facts and figures for you, just to get you thinking. 47% of UK workers want to change their jobs. 20% of those want to do that in the next 12 months. Apparently 57% of UK workers say that they are experiencing stress in the workplace. I'm surprised it's that low, to be honest. And a similar number, in the high 50s, of UK graduates don't use their degree at all in their job. Interestingly, 82% of UK workers would take a pay cut if they could have their dream job. So perhaps we don't just go to work for the money. Perhaps we're aspirational deep down inside. And 55% of people think the UK workplaces are getting stricter. So the way that you spend your time is monitored more closely. Apparently, UK employees work 26.5 days every year for free. So above and beyond their contract. And interestingly, 12% of sick days are fake. That's an interesting couple to put together, isn't it? So perhaps there's a bit of pros and cons going on there. 77.2%, which sounds overly accurate, I have to say, of the nation's workers complete their chores before they go to work. Although, interestingly, women spend 3 hours a day on housework while men spend 40 minutes. Yes. I'm not sure how women who spend 3 hours a day on housework get those done before the beginning of the day, but there you are. Some interesting facts for you to think about. Well, over the last couple of weeks, Kat Harrison has been interviewing a few people about the world of work, and I'm going to show you the video that she put together, which is quite interesting. And as you're going through it, the two questions that we're reflecting on in the video is, what do you like about the workplace and your work, and what do you not like about it? So off we go.
I like about work is working with children and helping make a difference to, hopefully, how I feel is the future of our world, really. And that's what I love about work.
I like working here at Step for the same reason, and helping the children, also being part of a good team, having friends that can help support with your work, and obviously being able to help support my family as a general work.
I like coming to work to be with other adults and to play and to work with children.
I think the variety mainly, and the opportunity to meet lots of different people every day, because that was the nature of the job that I did.
What do I like about work? It's fresh air, open, meet loads of people, you know, but it's totally different to going into a workspace where you are clock in, clock off. It's just dealing with people in their most prized position, most of it in their own houses, you know, so it's... Yeah, I'm a workaholic, and I've always done it from 15, and I carry on, and think about retiring, but never get depressed with it, never get run down with it, never get flustered with it. I don't think you're a Christopher.
No, no.
And it's just a way of life. It's like an hobby. Yeah, but in our game, it's totally different to people going in multinationals and offices. It's not like work. It's just like an hobby. Yeah.
I love meeting people. I love doing something that is kingdom related. And when I was working before, I wasn't doing something that was kingdom related. And I used to wish I was. So the boxes have all been ticked.
I don't like how tired it makes me. And I wish we got paid more. That would be nice, but we don't, so that's probably the worst two things. Pay and tiredness.
Probably the thing I don't like about work in general is there's a lot of paperwork now and a lot of financial business side of working with children, whereas it would just be nice to come in and pay.
I don't like this. Paperwork side.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, it's not good. Paperwork side
sucks,
to be honest. Am I allowed to
say that? What didn't I like about work was when I was moved over to a different job, and I was confined in the work that I was doing and had very little contact with people. So it was the total opposite of what I had before.
I don't really dislike anything, to be honest, I can't. But if you're a negative person, it's just about whether you're negative or not. We're both pretty well positive people, you know. We have come across some that, you know, make big issues out of nothing, but minimalise every problem, I think, and look on the... This is my grandma talking. Look on the bright side and never think of worse of things. You know, just be positive, yeah.
What don't I like about work? To be honest, I'm struggling here. I actually really, really like my job. Give me more time and I might come up with something. But at the moment, I really, really can't think of something to say. Yeah, can't. Sorry.
Why don't we spent a bit of time thinking about that and discussing that in our groups. What are the things that we really like about work, and what are the things that we find a real struggle? So in small groups, maybe 5 or 10 minutes, let's do that together. Let's do some thinking and just reflect and bring a bit of Bible to bear on what we're going to do. Thank you for your contributions and honesty about the best and the worst. Why don't we just spend a few moments reflecting on some of the themes that run in the Bible that might help us get a handle on things a little bit. So I've called this the good news to start off with. In terms of the world of work, God's a worker. Right at the beginning of Genesis, God works, and he makes, he forms, he builds, he plants. And not only that, but he makes it very clear, or the author of Genesis makes it very clear, that God is very pleased with what he does. And so there's something that resonates with us there, isn't there? Because we know what that's like. You were describing the jewellery and the creativity, and I guess all of us probably have some version of that creative process. And just as God is creative and works, so we've been made in his image, and we do a similar sort of thing. So when work goes well, when I teach a maths lesson and I feel like I've just blown the doors off with something that's worked really, really well, and the kids have just totally got what I know some of you are glazing over straight away at the thought of maths, but for me, this is you know, the pinnacle of my work life. I'm keying into something that's part of the creative process that originates in God and what he does in the beginning of those passages in Genesis. And we are commissioned as humans to go out and do a similar thing. And so in Genesis, that started off being farming and husbandry and that kind of primitive culture. But if you read your theologians, you'll see that they see that this has been extended to all aspects of civilization. So work can involve being involved in the sciences, in the social sciences, in the arts, in literature, education, all of those things, engineering. So the mandate to go out and work and to subdue and to be stewards involves working in all of those areas. Interestingly also, the Bible doesn't have a pecking order of jobs. So, you know, when you go to that social setting and somebody says, what do you do? And are you, like me, painfully conscious that I'm being put into a ladder somewhere? You know, and at the top is probably the Prime Minister and brain surgeons and Captain America. And the teachers are somewhere in the middle, hopefully. There's no hierarchy in the Bible. It seems to me that the Bible requires us to be faithful. And that can be anything that we do. And I think the Reformers got hold of this. Luther was very strong on the fact that there was no sacred or secular divide in the world of work. So the guy who shoes horses is doing something just as valid before God as the priest who serves the sacrament or whatever duties are going on. So there's no hierarchy in terms of the importance of jobs, and there's no secular and sacred divide in terms of importance either. And in terms of the hierarchy, we know that's true, isn't it? Because there's no shortage of lawyers, but try and find a builder, you know. So that's true of the Bible. In the New Testament, this is kind of expanded on as well, because, you know, we've got Jesus, who for years was a carpenter, did a skilled job, and before he entered into his full-time preaching ministry. And if you then move on to look at Paul is very clear that he doesn't want any Christians just to sit around doing nothing. There was a bunch of Christians who were just waiting for the second coming and saying, it's not really, you know, we don't want to do any work. There's no point. You know, we're just going to be really, really holy people. And he was pretty dismissive with that. It was, you know, you need to get off your chairs and go and do something useful. And if you don't do anything useful, then you're not going to get any money and you're not going to get any food. So he was fairly brutal about that. And so there's so much that's good about the whole world of work, and it derives from that creative mandate. And we talked a little bit as well about how there's a kind of secondary thing going on in the world of work, I think, that often happens now. For many of us, it's also our main community. And so we will spend, I probably spend more time with waking hours with my colleagues at work than I do with my family on a Monday to Friday. And so there is also a whole community angle, which, all right, sometimes means that there's conflict involved, but it also means that we can have a tremendous amount of support there. So there's a lot of good stuff about the world of work, but as you'll be aware, and this is why we set the whole thing up in terms of good and good and bad news, the fall has tainted the world of work as it's tainted many other things. And so human work has been corrupted and it's been perverted by the fall. So labour can now be a source of pain and suffering. It can be tedious and repetitive. I have 34 books to mark before tomorrow. And I can tell you that marking is a really, really useful thing. It's incredibly dull. And that would be reflected in every job. I imagine every job has aspects that are really, really tedious and boring and not that creative thing, but are important. And so you have to take the rough with the smooth. Work can be exploitative, can't it? I was out with some of my former colleagues at the school I used to work on Friday. And the school has just been very successful over the summer. And the results have trickled down and they've realised that. I don't think anyone realised how successful the school had been. And the senior management have had a policy of going into lessons and being quite critical of staff and giving them a really, really hard time. And that's gone on through a whole of last year. And senior managers have been brought in and told they're not working hard enough. And they've approached running the organisation using a model of really just being very picky and very critical. And worryingly, sometimes it kind of works because professionals respond to that. It's not right, is it? Because at that point, what's happening is the senior management are recognising that people who want to do well in a career that they see as a calling are vulnerable to criticism. And it makes them work even harder because they want to be successful for all the right reasons. And effectively, at that point, people are being exploited. Their good nature is being taken for granted. Many of the staff at the school that I was part of found that quite tough, that they were constantly being criticised, and they would respond. But it was in some ways, a very bullying and exploitative way of approaching management. And then lastly, I think that the other problem with the world of work is it can be an idol. It can be the thing that we look to for our identity. And I want to explore that a little bit more, but before I do that, I want to show you another... Oh, I forgot to click on. How many of you have seen the film Chariots of Fire?
Yeah.
If you've not seen it, it's a story about two runners who competed in the 1924 Olympics. And one of them was a Scottish runner called Eric Liddell, who subsequently became a missionary to China. And the other was a guy called Harold Abrahams, who was successful in the 100 metres. That was the 400 metres. And you'll be aware, some of you, that Eric Liddell caused all sorts of controversy because he was slated also to do the 100 metres and the heats were on a Sunday. And he would not run on Sunday. And if you've watched the film, you'll know that there was all sorts of manoeuvring to try and persuade him to run the Sunday. And he held firm, and in the end, he was offered to run the 400 metres, and he won the gold medal. Both of them won gold medals, and it's that remarkable feat that the story explores. And their approach to running, I think, is quite helpful in terms of thinking about the world of work. Because for Eric Liddell, he was... very, very clear that God had created him as a fast runner. He said to his sister, God has made me fast. And he knew that this was a gift from God. And he also maintained that it was something that when he did well to the best of his ability, that it gave God pleasure. That God was pleased with Eric Liddell. And so he has this wonderful sense of calling that God made him a runner. And interestingly, it wasn't paid. It was an amateur status thing in 1924. And yet God had given him this gift that he was going to use for the best of his ability, and he used it on a regular basis to get an audience and promote his faith. And yet, when he'd finished with the Olympics, he didn't continue as a runner. He knew that God then wanted him in a new phase of his life to go into China and be a missionary. And it's a fascinating story. God moved him into that area of service. And in the film, there's a fascinating contrast between him and Harold Abrahams, because Harold Abrahams was also a very, very successful man. There's a clip in the film where he is preparing for the 100 metres himself. And he's talking to his friend Aubrey, and this is what he said. And it's quite a contrast in terms of the way that he views his running. He says to Aubrey, "You're brave, compassionate and kind, a content man. That's your secret, contentment. I'm 24 and I've never known it. I'm forever in pursuit and I don't even know what I'm chasing. And now in 1 hour's time, I will be out there again. I will raise my eyes and look down that corridor, 4 foot wide, with 10 lonely seconds to justify my whole existence. But will I? Aubrey, I've known the fear of losing, but now I'm almost too frightened to win." And it's interesting, because for Harold Abrahams, his whole identity was tied up with that ability to run fast. He didn't have anything else. It was the most important thing for him, and he was absolutely petrified that he wasn't going to be able to grasp this identity as this championship runner. Whereas Eric Liddell was able to leave it to one side and follow what God's calling was for him for the next part of his life. And I think that's helpful for us, because I just put this slide up as work as a calling, not as an identity. Our work is not our identity. Our identity, as Eric Liddell's was, is as a saved child of God. That's our identity. And that's important, because it means that we are free and we don't have the kind of oppressive anxiety that Harold Abrahams had with his 100 metres. And it's interesting that I often see a lot of my colleagues whose identity is to be a teacher, and their whole sense of self-worth is wrapped up in that. In some ways it can be really, really tough. But the gospel says that because our identity is as a child of God, first, that gives us freedom. You know, I love teaching, and I think God's called me to be a teacher. But if God takes that away from me or takes me somewhere else, that's not the end of my world. It also means perhaps that Christians can take more risks in the workplace, because at the end of the day, they're not tied into this job as an identity. And perhaps it also means that we can think more of others, because our identity is secure. We're not chasing after a particular thing, a particular pinnacle of that career. So I think that's quite an interesting, an interesting way of approaching our jobs, that a calling is not an identity, that God has given us something that is perhaps unique. And I think the reformers were very clear on this, that every Christian is unique, has a particular skill mix, a particular personality, and God's got a plan for that, and he's already preparing things for us to do. So that's a calling that we want to identify, but it's not our identity itself.
Could I say that I heard something once about somebody at work somewhere else who was very, very ambitious, and everything he did was about his work.
Mm.
Even his personal life was about his work. And somebody said to me, he's spending his whole time climbing that ladder up the wall. And when he got to the top, he looked around him and he was climbing the wrong wall.
Mm.
And it was so true.
Yeah.
Everything fell down, his wife left. He had nothing at the end when he got to retirement.
Yeah, absolutely right. So, I guess that means that for all of us, we're going to want to explore what our calling is. And for some of us it'll be our job, some of us it might not be a job. Some people I know, their job is something that they do functionally, and their calling is outside of that job. But finding out what that is, I guess, is important, and my sense is that all of us have a particular place that God wants us. But also, I think I'd like to explore a little bit about, in the workplace, what does it look like in terms of being a Christian? We've been doing a kind of period of evangelism, haven't we? Where we've been thinking about mission. And for many of us, the workplace is the biggest mission field. The guy who's in charge of the London Institute of Contemporary Christianity, Mark Green, former advertising executive, he shows this very graphically, and he talks about how in the workplace, Christians are often surrounded by people who are not Christians, who have a different faith. And it gives us, if we are in a world of work that's secular, a wonderful, wonderful opportunity. So what I'd like to do now is have another kind of discussion thing and ask the question, what would Jesus do in our workplace if he was doing our jobs? And spend a few minutes thinking about that. Because I have a sneaking suspicion that if we really let loose in our jobs, then it wouldn't be that difficult to get into a conversation about our faith, because the starting point for some people would be, why are you like this? Why do you do things that way? And I wonder whether if we reflect for a few minutes on what Jesus would do in the situation, we're more likely to get that sort of question. So, 5 or 10 minutes, folks. What would Jesus do in the jobs that we're doing? And then we'll come back together again. Thank you. Good. I want to draw things to a close, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for coming this evening. I hope that's been helpful.